K1037 aims to bring Ottawa an informative, community-oriented, and diverse talk show. To ensure a wide range of opinions, K1037 reserves the right to screen calls. Guests' opinions are not necessarily those of the radio station or its management. Now, Dede Watardan. All of us are talking on the Party Line Talk Show on K1037.
Good afternoon and welcome to Dede Watarda Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Lance Stacey, and today we on the show is the final one in our month-long
series,
I guess we can call it, on addictions and a path to recovery. And I think it's been an exciting month with some very honest people who've told some amazing stories and sharing their lives, and we're open up. And I've got a lot of good feedback from community, people who felt it was inspiring and passing on information. So I don't know, have you had any feedback from people, Jessica?
You know, it's great because I will, you know, be at the gas station or grabbing something to eat. You go to Dustin's in the morning and you just bump into people who are like, you know, I heard so-and-so's show and, you know, it brought me to tears. Like, I have people saying they've actually been listening to the shows and crying and developing a whole new understanding of, you know, what the experience of addiction and recovery is for some people, or what the experience of, you know, substance abuse is for some people. And I also think it's opening up some really valuable dialogue about, you know, how do you support somebody who wants to stop? And how do you help somebody who wants to stop? Or how do you just, you know, maybe you don't think somebody has a problem, but they think things need to change, right? You know, so really talking about what sorts of limits some people have and other people's limits, and really what is the function of your relationship with substances? Because that's, you know, that's what the core is of what we're trying to get to, is that relationship. Why does it work for some people where it doesn't interfere with their lives? And for other people, why does that relationship just consume everything so that it leads to an impairment in just regular day-to-day life?
I think the other interesting thing is that all their stories were so different, mm-hmm. and their approaches to recovery and maintaining sobriety are different, using different methods, different approaches. And I guess it goes to show that one method doesn't fit all. And I think that was a very valuable message.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk to, you know, some of our guests, you know, some of them will, you know, come right out and say, I was an alcoholic. I was a blackout addict.
Yeah.
Whereas some people are saying, you know, it got to the point where I realized I wasn't able to respect my limits anymore. And, you know, I think it's really valuable to draw that point, because often we hear that you have to wait for somebody to hit rock bottom.
And that's not always the case.
It's not always the case. Right? So it's just, you know, we're here to raise awareness. We're not here to point our fingers at anybody or, you know, tell anybody that there's a problem with the way they consume whatever substances that they're consuming. It's just, hey, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? That's it.
Open dialogue.
Right. So, none of these shows would have been possible in the past month without Ryan Montour. And I always say, you know, things just kind of happen. After Sober is Sexy, and Luann and I, you know, we had been talking about being able to do this for a long time.
Very long time.
And I was sitting at my desk thinking, where am I going to find people to come on the show? And lo and behold, I get a call from reception and they're like, Ryan Montour's here. He's asking for so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, but none of them are here. Will you talk to him? And I said, yes, definitely. So, you know, Ryan was able to really find everybody who was, you know, brave enough to come out and talk about these issues surrounding addiction. So I don't want to take up too much time, but I do want to thank Ryan and let our guests know that joining us in studio today is Ryan Montour.
Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, I'm honored to be here today. The people that I did ask to come on the show and to share their stories, I just want to give them a big thank you, because it is very encouraging, and you do have to be You know, you have to be proud of where you're at in your life right now to be able to share your story to a bunch of strangers and a bunch of eyes and ears listening on the radio today. So I'm just going to do a quick rundown of the people that have asked, and I want to thank them. I also want to thank, first of all, Jessica for inviting myself to recruit these people to be able to to get this message out of sobriety in Tungunawaga. I think it's highly needed. And together we work together, and Luann Stacy for hosting us on her talk show. So it starts with them too, and then it starts with the people. I'll go down my list that I know came on. My first person was John McCumber, Nyao Goa. He came on with somebody I just asked like a Saturday, and the show was on Tuesday. And you know, I want to really thank her, because Jessica had screened all the other applicants before, and she just went on a whim and got a phone call from me, and she stepped up to the plate. That was Yugawine Delormier. The next two guests were Dan Tice and Lauren McCumber.
Leora
Charles.
Leora
Charles. I have three L's on the list, so. And then it was Lauren McCumber by herself. Unfortunately, one of our guests at that time, for personal reasons, dropped out. You know, it's hard to come up here, and it's hard to be in front of the community for to do certain things, especially a personal thing, something just as intimate as your own lifelong or battle with addiction, you know. No. Last week we had Lyle, there's my other L, and Lyle and Lisa. You know, some of them are more into sobriety, and some of them are shorter terms into sobriety, but I try to change it up with different ways, as we were talking earlier, different ways of recovery. You know, some use the gym, some use Reiki, some use AA, some just decide a lifestyle change, you know. And I think the last, I saved myself for last, so I could jump in. I could jump in at the end in case somebody had dropped out, you know. But I think my case was a little bit more serious, you know, with my circumstances. So that's why I chose myself to go last. And I also had another guest here today, but, you know, it didn't work out today, so.
We'll try again. Like I said, we talked in between air, and other shows are possible if there are other people who would want to join us. We did get some call-ins, you know, you know, people saying that they were 1 year sober, and you're starting to see that more, where more people are proud of their change in lifestyle, and I find that very exciting.
And with all of our guests, I think the first thing I told all of them was, it doesn't matter when you change, if you change your mind, you could be in the studio. If you change your mind and you don't want to do it anymore, that's fine. Because it's such a huge thing to ask people to put themselves in such a vulnerable situation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, again, just to thank everybody who came on the show, because they really took on a lot to be able to do that. And it takes, I keep saying it, it just takes so much bravery.
It does. So I guess we'll start, Ryan. How did you start down the path of alcohol and drug abuse?
I think my story starts before I actually started drinking. It, I was a survivor of sexual abuse. I was a victim of violence. I had a death in my family from drunk driving, you know. And my story starts when with my name. My name is Ryan Keith Montour. I was named after my uncle who had died in a car crash and on the 207. And there was fire involved. And, you know, back then in the day, they didn't have our Gunawaga Fire Brigade as sophisticated as they are, you know. So he burnt in front of everybody, you know. And I never knew that. I was working in Indiana, and I found that out later. Do you know your uncle? You know, I said, no, I know I was named after him, and they told me the story. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because it relates back to my story, where I was involved in a car crash, and there was fire involved, you know. So 40 years later, the circle was complete. moving on from my traumas, you know, after the death of my brother, I was 15 years old. You know, you lose your best friend, and it's I actually had an argument with him too before. So, and the last words I said to him was, the sun still shines in the morning. So, you know, you don't grieve properly, you know, you don't, you know, you always have that that conflict that you had before he died. So that's the last words you're going to live with, you know. Mm-hmm. So, of course, for me, it was hard, you know, to think of that we actually fought, you know, like the last time I seen him.
Mm-hmm.
Moving along, like high school was the same way. I only started drinking like I think 15 years old, so to me it was kind of late, you know. I drank my first drinks behind the church, you know, and I remember us calling down the priest at the time, you know, like, you know, calling them bad names, and we were like rebelling against the church. I had three beers and we walked to Kim's Arcade. It's behind the current fire hall there. There used to be an arcade there. Also, the very first time I got drunk was on the Black Bridge. You know, we used to go to LaSalle because the LaSalle would be easier to sell beer. We used to pitch our money in and we would grab some beer and we'd go drink on the decks in between the Black Bridge, you know. Looking back now, you're like, "What? How stupid can I be?" You know, but at
15, 16, it's like the cool thing to do. You know,
it was the greatest thing. I remember drinking, and thank God that we made it. We made it back. You know, we had to stagger across the Black Bridge and go through the train tracks and cross the CPR bridge. But you know, when I looked down at the water and I seen the water rushing, you know, to me it was always like that vision's always in my mind. You know, the rushing water, wow, what a rush. And years on in therapy, one of my counselors has suggested to me that maybe, you know, you're associating that rush with alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, so then we have 1990, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't talk about it, but it was a scary time, you know, even for a proud Mohawk man, you know. It's there's fear involved, there's anger, there's like, well, what do these guys think they're gonna do to us, you know, like you question life, you know, you mm-hmm. question life. And especially after my brother died, I had the attitude like, every day that I live is gonna be one more day that he never lived. So I went full torque, you know. I started drinking all the time, you know. I was a straight A student in high school. I went to a private school in Montreal, you know. And my drinking got to a point where I just gave up on my studies, you know, and I didn't really care. And I requested a transfer to Howard S. Billings, you know. Just under peer pressure, of course. You want to be with your friends, you want to drink, you know. So that was a mistake I find on my part, you know. Like, I should have stayed in a more structured environment, you know. But when I got to Billings, you know, of course you're exposed to a whole different other world, you know, and you're more with your friends, so you have more peer pressure, you know. And of course you're introduced to what's going on in the hallways, you know. It's you're selling hash in the hallways, you're smoking weed, you're doing acid, you're going over the bridge, you get purple micro dots, you know, and it's cool, you know. And I too attended those Mercier Bridge, Mercier dances, and drinking in the bush there, you know. And we'd sometimes walk all the way home till we made it to Chateauguay line, take a taxi and jump it, you know, drive up Morris's, jump the taxi. That was our week in life, enjoying high school for me. Of course, 90 comes and we have the whole crisis going on, you know. And you know, you start to question yourself, like, why are you here and why do these people want to kill me? You know, well, I'm gonna kill them, I want to kill them too. Yeah. You know, that's fear, that's yeah. anger being built up. And so what do you do with those feelings? Yeah. You're 17 years old, you know, going on 18, you know. So I wanted to learn how to fight, you know. I didn't want to be in that position where these people had this power over me, you know. And I joined the military so I could learn to fight back, basically. Wow. You know, to beat them, you have to learn how to operate, right? So that was my my main motivation for joining the Marines. But I don't know if people know this, the United States Marine were born in a tavern. 1775, they were born in Tun Tavern, Philadelphia, you know. So there's a big alcohol culture when you join the Marines, you know. They're actually 1 year older than the United States itself. So everything's alcohol based. You train, okay, we're going to reward you with a case of beer, you know. You train, you do good on things, oh, I'm going to buy you a case of beer, you know. Let's go party. Yeah, let's go chase girls in the bars. Let's go off base and, you know, everything that's promoting alcohol, basically. So, you know, I ran with it.
So I guess we've worked our way to a break, but we're going to come back to that because I think this is another important piece to elaborate on. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.